Welcome to Newcastle Libraries Reel. Newcastle Libraries can be accessed wherever you live with the Newcastle Libraries app. Put borrowing at your fingertips.
We would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land on which we live, the Awabakal and Warramai people, who were the first storytellers of this nation and are the proud survivors of more than 200 years of continuing dispossession.
Hello everyone. Today's podcast features two of our librarians, Sky Jones and Pat Annetts, discussing their recommended reading for the summer ahead. I hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome to your summer stories for 2023-24. Once again, we have seven fabulous new Australian books for you to enjoy over the summer. This summer's books are The Opposite of Success by Eleanor Elliott Thomas, Never Look Desperate by Rachel Matthews, Ordinary Gods and Monsters by Chris Womersley, Everyone on This Train is a Suspect by Benjamin Stevenson, Doll's Eye by Leah Kaminsky, Eden Glassie by Melissa Lukashenko, and The Talented Mrs. Greenway by Tia Cooper. Pat and I have been catching up on all these great titles to help you choose where to start your summer reading journey.
And where better to start than with the follow-up by Benjamin Stevens, the follow-up to Everyone in My Family Has Killed Someone. His new book is Everyone on This Train is a Suspect. Ernest Cunningham, the great central character from the first book, returns in this deliciously witty locked train mystery. When the Mystery Writers Society Crime Festival is held aboard the GAN, the famous train between Darwin and Adelaide, the program is a who's who of crime writing royalty. The debut writer, Ernest, the forensic science writer, the blockbuster writer, the legal thriller writer, the literary writer, and the psychological suspense writer. But when one of them is murdered, six authors quickly turn into five detectives. Together, they should know how to solve a crime, or to commit one. How can you find a killer when all the suspects know how to get away with murder? This is just as fantastic as the first book in the series. Ernest is as intrusive as ever, providing clues and spoilers along the way. If you're a fan of Agatha Christie or locked room mysteries, you'll love this series. I highly, highly recommend it. I absolutely loved this book. It's so funny and clever twists and turns. He even tells you at various points through the book how many times he mentions the murderer's name. So if you really wanted to, perhaps if you're using a Kindle, you could count back and find what he's up to. It's fantastic. In the vein of Anthony Horowitz, who has a similar character the author puts himself in the story, this reminded me of that a lot.
Me too, yeah. Very, very much. And in that Anthony Horowitz series, there is also that self-deprecation aspect that I really did enjoy about Ernest. And his partner, who is just so generous with him.
Yes.
And I loved that it leads in the text saying, I know I shouldn't say this, I know I shouldn't say this, and then he says it.
And he says it. He keeps putting his foot in it. I know I shouldn't put my foot in here, but I'm going to.
Yeah. It was really, really... I really enjoyed all of the quirks of all of the characters. I loved the isolation, like the locked room sort of aspect of this train heading through the middle of nowhere. There was so much about this that I did open it with hesitation because I don't know why, but I couldn't put it down once I did. I really enjoyed it and I will go back and read the first one now.
Oh, definitely. You'll have to. Yeah. And I'll look forward to the third one.
Oh. Our next book is The Talented Mrs. Greenway by Tia Cooper. I actually haven't had the opportunity to read this one yet because it's been so popular with library users, it's a little hard to get your hands on a copy. Fortunately, one of our lovely colleagues, Jen, has written a review for us to talk about today. This compellingly realised novel brings to life the story of an enigmatic figure, wife to feted colonial architect Francis Greenway, and asks, whose hand really shaped Sydney? This is a wonderful work of Australian historical fiction, and we're taken on a journey originating in England and ending in colonial Australia. It centres around Mary Greenway, wife of Francis, who was the convict architect and engineer responsible for building many of Sydney's most iconic buildings. Mary is a woman of great resourcefulness and even greater creativity. The story is woven around her ability to create a life for herself and her family in the inhospitable new settlement at Sydney Cove. It's a story with secrets, passion and resilience, and is written with Tia Cooper's customary mix of historical facts and fiction. It illustrates the role that women played at this time in Australia's history and the strength of character that women need to flourish. The characters are entirely relatable, and it's not difficult to become invested in seeing their success. Tia's work has been immensely popular with library members, and I'm really looking forward to having a chance. To me, this is, you know, another one of those really nice...
It's your holiday read.
Yeah.
I think last summer I read The Cartographer's Secret, and it's set in the Hunter Valley, so there's that link to Newcastle and Maitland. And the way Tia puts a fictitious character in amongst real people and real history, and it's so well researched but so readable. I highly, highly recommend any of her books. Looking forward to reading this one as well. I'm also on the holds list, waiting to get a hold of a copy for myself. Ordinary Gods and Monsters by Chris Womersley. This book put me so much in mind of two of my favourite Australian books, Boy Swallows Universe and Jasper Jones, all mixed up together. It's the story of a young boy called Nick, at that time between the end of school and the beginning of adult life. That time when you were told that anything was possible and also that everything is different. So we meet Nick and his neighbour Marion, who've been friends since they were tiny little kids. When Marion's dad is killed by a hit and run, there are no suspects and no leads. Nick and Marion decide to find the killer after a séance gives them a clue, leading to bikies, drugs and dangerous adventures. It's really and a really enjoyable but thoughtful and uniquely Australian book, a really great coming-of-age story, and there's a mystery thrown in there as well. I love Nick's character. You could just... He's very sensible and very strong, but also very young and very naive. It's that great mix, and he and Marion embark on this adventure and end up in very hot water, I might say. But there are other things happening, and, Skye, you were talking about one of those things before.
I think that there's... The sense of time in this book is really well written. It's not just a crime or a mystery thriller. It is... a literary style book, and the setting of an Australian summer at a time before everyone had air conditioning and everyone's trying to escape the heat in different
ways. All that time of sitting, staring out the window and sitting on the windowsill, yeah.
Or trying to find a shady tree yes. Or anything that might just be a little bit cooler than what you're experiencing. And I really liked the dynamics in Nick's family. I found that really interesting, the divorce that's going on between his parents, how they're both handling it. I found a lot of that really relatable and true of the period of time that it was written. I really liked Nick, and like you say, he's really sensible. But then he does some stuff and I think, oh, Nick.
Heading down to the drug dealer and having a seance.
Yeah, you know, smoking joints before a funeral. You're better than that, Nick.
But that's the part of his naivety. He doesn't realise it. There are real things in the world that can hurt you. I think
that's really true because that is the thing with this book. It's that period of time where you... expected to be an adult, but you're no longer a child, but you're not yet an adult. The world is still mysterious to you.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, one of the greatest aspects of this book as these children start to see the world of
their
adults.
Bikes. They're riding their bikes to go and hunt drug dealers. It's great.
Yeah, it's a very enjoyable book. I haven't read this author in the past, have you?
No, I haven't, no, but I will look for more.
Yeah, me too. Our next book is Never Look Desperate by Rachel Matthews. Main characters Bernard, his mum Goldie and Min are all searching for something more, to move beyond their feelings of being trapped in a lonely, unhappy present in post-COVID Melbourne. Bernard and Min are middle-aged singles trying to negotiate new relationships. Goldie's lonely too, though loath to admit it. This is written with warmth, honesty, humour. It's probably best described as a tragicomedy. The characters' vulnerability makes you really invest in them and cheer them on from the sidelines. Goldie's my standout character in this book. She's spiky and difficult and nasty and says some outrageous things. And I do really like that in a character. Somebody that has the guts to say what we're thinking
at times. I found her a bit annoying, and I thought she was terribly cruel to Bernard.
She was.
And obviously responsible for his lack of confidence.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, she wasn't...
wasn't the ideal mum.
Wasn't perfect. But I do. I really liked it. And this book is really very reminiscent of Sorrow and Bliss by Meg Mason. It's got that sad and funny in it. It's got so much that makes you want the people to succeed.
Succeed, yes.
Even Goldie, by the time the book starts to move and you get into the final third.
Very clever how she turns your opinion around, because I did find Goldie really annoying and irritating, but then there was that sadness about her that came out as the story went on, as she took off on her cruise and why she did, and she was lonely.
Yeah. And it goes... It's a beautiful thing, I think, because it does make you really think about the people in your own family that might be a little bit challenging when you have get-togethers or things like that. And none of us really know how somebody else is feeling. No. And so they might be masking that by being a bit snappy or judgy or irritable. And it's not until they feel that they can be comfortable enough to be vulnerable that you can see who they really are.
Very true, very true. And another little thing that I loved with the text between Mim and Bernard, the wit in those, those throwaway witty lines, which...
I thought Bernard was really funny.
He was really funny, but he didn't know that.
No.
You know?
He just didn't see any of the beauty in himself, and nor does Mim.
Nor does Mim.
It's a really special book. I think it's one of those things that maybe we could all benefit from reading, and a little bit of self-reflection.
Yes, perhaps. Now for something completely different and a literary historical novel, Doll's Eye by Leah Kaminsky. This novel begins in Germany in 1933, where we have young Anna Winter returning home to find that her father has mysteriously disappeared. And he's left a note warning her that she's in grave danger. She flees overnight and eventually ends up in Australia, in the outback at the Budrum Hotel, where she carves a new life as a very efficient barmaid, hiding her past from the world. And then she has a chance encounter with Alter, a young Yiddish poet who's fleeing persecution. I think this is around 1938 that he turns up. He and Anna form a relationship. He's convinced that Anna is the one. But there's a disturbing clue in her dark past that threatens to unravel the delicate life she has built. So shifting in time and place between Germany in the 30s, outback Australia in the late 30s, early 40s, and then into Melbourne in modern times, we follow the story of why Anna is here, what her past is, the relationship with her and Alter. And it's a slow burning story. It takes a while for things to happen, and you find yourself, well, I found myself Googling all of the times and places and people they met, because it is richly connected to fact. And Sky knows my favourite part is my favourite fact that I learned from this book was about the Cossack peanut farmers of the Kimberley. They did exist. They, the White Russians came out from Russia, and the Cossacks were seen racing their horses down the main street as they farm peanuts to help the war effort.
Yeah, the peanuts and war effort was something I got a little stuck on. My favourite fact was the Burnham Hotel. So we know from when we did the series, I think it was two summers ago, when we had the people that wrote Lost in Larimer, which was about the disappearance of Paddy Moriarty. So the actual Burnham Hotel was relocated to Larimer, and that was the last place that Paddy Moriarty was ever seen.
I love that fact.
So that linked in really well. I think what you said in the way that this is written is really, it's very thoughtful. It feels like the author has really, every word has been carefully chosen and selected. It does a really, really good job of evoking those deeper emotions that Anna is really trying hard to put behind her. And it's as though the harder she tries, the more that they surface.
Yeah, yeah. And there was that other thing of the reaches of the anti-Semitism.
Absolutely.
And that whole the racism actually of the town.
Well, yes. Yeah. And the racist guy.
And the racist guy.
In
Tell us about that, Skye, because I didn't spot this.
So when Alter comes to town and there's one particularly racist, he's certainly portrayed as a drunken yob, really. Yeah. And he is quite confrontational, seems to be really... I think I saw it as he was quite attracted to Anna, but she was in no way interested in a man so rough and coarse. And so Alter comes to town and their relationship begins to deepen, and during that time this man goes missing.
I thought he just wandered off into the bush.
Gave up. Well, like I said, I really thought that that was where we were going to go with this novel. So I was quite surprised that he just went missing, and that was it.
I have to go back. I totally missed that.
It was a really enjoyable book, though, and well worth making this year's list.
Yeah.
The next book is The Opposite of Success by debut author Eleanor Elliott Thomas. It opens with Laurie Hope, and she's anticipating being successful and gaining a promotion she's not even sure she wants, and looking forward to launching a major work project. But nothing's going to play out the way that Laurie had planned. This book has great, witty dialogue, liberal use of corporate speak and jargon, great characters, sparkling humour. It's got everything you want for a beach read. It's sharp and funny. And I really like the idea. I think it's this is what I got from the back of the book, actually, that says a sensational new voice to remind us that failure is always an option.
And she does. It's just this snowball of this goes wrong and then that goes wrong, and she keeps sort of running headlong. It's like a snowball rolling down the hill, gathering all this crap as she goes down, and the day gets worse and worse and you're feeling, no, don't do that. Don't get that pantsuit. But she keeps going. It's hilarious.
Right. Don't start drinking at 10:30 in the morning. It's never going to end well. But it's just a really funny book, but it, at heart, what I think is quite interesting in it is it's a story about us pushing ourselves as though we have to, as though to be relevant, we have to be climbing the corporate ladder, we have to be seen to be trying to achieve and to stretch. And realistically, Laurie's quite happy.
She is quite happy. And that the fact that the book is, it's a day in the life. It's so much seems to happen in the day in her life. But the people she comes across, I mean, her friend that she has the boozy lunch with, and you know, he's actually a really nice guy. They have a great friendship there.
He's very funny. Yeah, I really enjoyed him. The friend that pushes for the invite to the work launch.
Oh, yes.
I had a difficult relationship with her. I wasn't sure that you could call somebody that would do that a friend.
A friend, yeah. And what about Glup?
Glup.
Glup the developer. Just the name. It's a bit Dickensian in that name.
It is.
The funny name for the character that suits.
It just makes you laugh when you see it on the page. Yeah. It's just a fun name. It's a really fun book. Yeah. It's very, very much worth a read. And something that, you know, you really could open in the morning on the beach and finish it that night in bed.
Definitely. Well, I had been to see Wankonomics just before I read this, and Wankonomics is the chasers, the shovel take on corporate speak, and this book It uses it so well. You know, she's off to her boss to get her promotion. Or is she, you know? And working for a local government.
There's a lot of resonance.
There's a lot of anyway, it's great. It's really good. Okay, so our last book, this is the one I'm saving to read over the summer. I think this is one that will take time and reflection to read from all that I've read about it, reviews I've seen. It's Eden Glassie by Melissa Lukashenko, the author of Too Much Lip. This is set in Brisbane in two timelines. So we've got two extraordinary Indigenous stories set five generations apart. We have Mulian, who and his beautiful partner Nita in Eden Glasson in the 1800s, in the time before when the saltwater people were still outnumbered the British, who were just moving into that area. Two centuries later, fiery activist Winona meets Dr. Johnny, who's caring for her granny, Granny Edie, who is just the most fabulous character from what I've read. I'm looking forward to it. I've seen some lines of her. She provides this wonderful wisdom and humour that the elders seem to have. So we don't know the connection between two centuries ago and now. So it sort of weaves those stories together from the 1850s to 2024, so a little ahead. We're looking at the bicentenary in Brisbane. But at the heart of it all, it's a love story. So it's the love story between Mulian and Nita and the love story between Winona and Dr. Johnny. There's that love, and there's the love for the country, the love for the past, and looking to the love for the future that could have been or could be. If Melissa Lukashenko handles this with the compassion and strength that she has dealt with in Too Much Lift, I think it'll be a wonderful, wonderful read. It sounds like it's full of joy and sorrow and about what the land means.
I too am saving this one because I do feel like it's something that deserves my focus and my time. Mm. It's not a book that you're going to open in the morning and finish that night.
No.
It's something that you need to read and stop and think about. It sounds fascinating.
Yes.
I know that as it's been coming back in, as members are returning it, it's one of those books that they don't just want to put in the return chute. They want to come and have a chat, ask you if you've read it, what you've thought about it. Again, it's been incredibly popular in the Grab and Go collection, yeah, and has been one that you're lucky if you see it on the shelf.
Which is great because we need to have this Indigenous voice in literature. We need people to be reading books written by Indigenous authors telling their own stories, and this is another one that hopefully will do that.
I couldn't agree more.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. This was recorded at the Digital Library at 12 Stuart Avenue in Newcastle. This podcast room is available to hire and comes equipped with microphones, headphones and a sound mixer. Everything you need to start recording something yourself. If you or anyone you know is interested in recording a podcast themselves, get in touch with your local library.